Hello, this is Lafayette Faust, creator of the Nevermore Hollows podcast. Thank you for making the show a success. Please take a moment to subscribe, give 5 stars, comment, and share the show with your friends. It's the best way to help us grow and to be able to continue to provide quality horror content. Also, please support our new art director, Chris Madman Goins at Black Sheep Studios TN on Instagram. He has some amazing Nevermore Hollows art for sale, signed by the both of us, as well as many other original pieces I think you're gonna love. Now, for you horror hounds who like to have a good laugh, I invite you to check out my other podcast. It's called The Three Uncool Cats. In it, my two friends and I sit in a basement and discuss music, movies, and whatever else comes into our warped minds. I would really appreciate it if you would give it a listen. Now, with that out of the way, I invite you to sit back, turn on a light, and prepare yourself. I grew up watching those old sci-fi movies. You know, the ones about mad scientists who thought they were gods and attempted to create new life, but ended up creating monsters that raged against their existence and caused mayhem and death. Tonight's story is about one such creature, created during an experiment gone horribly wrong one dark night in the biology lab at Hitchcock High. I am Lafayette Faust, and I tell these stories from my secret bunker here in Nevermore, in the hopes that someone somewhere hears and understands that in so many cases, the monsters modern science create, whether they be viruses or chimeras made from splicing human and animal DNA, can often be so much worse than any paranormal monster that may stalk us from the shadows. So, with that thought rampaging through your brain, I invite you to sit back, turn on a light, and prepare yourself. Calvin Sanders took a seat at a table in a far corner of the Hitchcock High School library and waited on his friends. A few minutes later, Sophia Castillo and Katana Fujikawa walked in and glanced around looking for him. He waved and got their attention. They made their way over and sat in chairs across from him. "Sorry," Katana said. She had shoulder-length raven black hair that she often pulled up into a top knot, as it was now. "We got stuck at that stupid pep rally. I really hate those things." "Tell me about it," Sophia said. "And our mascot is terrible. A man in a hockey mask? That doesn't even make sense. I mean, we have baseball, basketball, and football teams, but there's no hockey here." "You're missing the point," Calvin said. "The school was founded with money donated by Alfred Hitchcock back in 1960. When we finally got around to getting sports teams in the 80s, the school decided to call our teams the Psychos, after Hitchcock's most famous movie. But a mascot being a guy dressed as his mother seemed kind of lame, so they chose the hockey mask because of the Friday the 13th movies. It seemed more menacing and iconic." "Okay, whatever," Sophia said. She had lots of attitude, always had some cause she was championing, and expressed her opinions on everything. "It's still terrible and even offensive." Calvin shrugged. "It was done very tongue-in-cheek. Back then, unlike you, people weren't so easily offended." Katana rolled her eyes. "Give it a break, you two. Where's Evan?" Calvin straightened his glasses. You know Evan, always late. He'll be here. The bell rang, and a few minutes later the library door swung open, and Evan Mack walked in. He had spiky blonde hair and wore jeans and a Run DMC t-shirt. He saw them and strode over. What's up, my homies? You're late, Sophia said. Evan smirked. I refuse to live by the bell. It's bad enough I have to come to this government-run institution and be taught nothing but how to make money for the man. They're lucky I even show up. Calvin rolled his eyes. Evan loved old-school rap and saw himself as a rebel. Calvin was more into jazz and preferred to stay under the radar, but even so, they were close friends. Evan took a seat. So, what are we doing here? Sophia smiled. We have to choose our biology lab partners. Not it. Calvin threw his hand up in the air and said, not it. Katana's face melted into a frown. Crap. Evan narrowed his eyes, not understanding. Then he got it. Aw, not cool. You make it seem like I'm an idiot. Katana leaned across the table and pointed a pencil at him. You're not an idiot, Evan, but your rebellious attitude gets in the way of schoolwork. You pull your weight this time or I will stab you in the face. Evan threw up his hands. Okay, okay, I get it. Katana relented and smiled. She would never hurt him or the other two. She loved them. She'd grown up an only child, and her parents were both workaholics, which left her alone with nothing but her art for comfort and companionship. She had never had any real friends until she came to Nevermore Hollows last year and met this group of misfits. Now they were inseparable. Evan snatched the pencil from Katana and put it out of her reach, just in case. So, this new biology teacher, Dr. Schrodinger, what's the word? For real, Sophia said. He literally looks like a mad scientist. He has the wild hair, the crazy eyes, and that accent. What is it? German, Calvin said. I heard his grandfather was Erwin Schrodinger. Who's that? Sophia said. Calvin was smart. He read everything he could get his hands on, and he loved to share his knowledge with his friends. You've never heard of Schrodinger's cat? Nope, Evan said. Katana and Sophia shook their heads. Erwin Schrodinger was a theoretical physicist, Calvin explained. He came up with this experiment where you put a cat in a box, drop some poison inside and seal it up. He proposed that while in the box, the cat was both alive and dead at the same time. Well, that's hard to wrap your mind around, Katana said. What was the point of that experiment? Well, he supposedly never actually performed the experiment, Calvin said. He just theorized. But the point was this. He proposed that the person opening the box would determine the cat's fate. Katana leaned forward in her seat, clearly intrigued. So what you're saying is, if I were to open the box, believing that the cat was alive, it would be alive. But if Evan opened the box, believing the cat was dead, it would be dead? Calvin nodded. We've grossly oversimplified, but yes, that's it in a nutshell. Erwin Schrodinger was trying to prove that we create our own reality. That's insane, Sophia said. I hope Dr. Schrodinger isn't as crazy as he looks or as strange as his grandfather. The bell rang, indicating that it was time to change classes. Well, we're about to find out, Calvin said. They stood and made their way out into the hall, pushed through the mass of students, and stepped into the biology lab. The lab was furnished with 6 2-person workstations where experiments would be conducted. Along the wall to the right, and in the back of the room were shelves and cabinets filled with supplies and specimen jars. The windows to their left looked out onto the school grounds. The blinds were pulled down, and the dim overhead fluorescent lights did little to dispel the gloom. Dr. Wolfgang Schrödinger was standing at the blackboard, back to them, writing instructions and drawing diagrams in chalk. He was tall and lanky, looked to be 60, had a shock of hair, and wore a lab coat. Katana and Evan sat together at one of the workstations in the back of the room. Calvin and Sophia took the other. They exchanged curious glances as the other kids shuffled in and took their seats. All the while, Dr. Schrödinger kept silent, scribbling away at the board. The bell rang, and he turned to the class. He wore black round-framed glasses and wore a crimson bow tie. He turned to the class and took the time to let his gaze fall on each of the 12 students, sizing them up, causing them to involuntarily flinch and squirm.
Let's take a quick break.
Out of the woods can the moon...
Moon Carter is a family fictional podcast, and I mean for the family. Parents, do you find it really hard to make it through your children's podcasts?
Then listen to Moon Carter and join me, Splot, and the gang on our magical adventures. Click all the links below or get it from where you get your podcast from. But if you need to be told that, then I worry about you. Splot. It's like drink water from where water's from.
Not,
what's that about?
Not helping. Moon Carter is a podcast. You like it.
Finally, he made a face as if he smelled something foul. I am Dr. Schrödinger. I will attempt to teach you many great and terrible things about this plane of existence we call life. You will be challenged, and I expect you to keep up, if you can. Katana glanced at Calvin and whispered, "What's he mean by great and terrible things?" Calvin shrugged. Your last lab instructor, Miss Arlene, has suffered an unfortunate accident and had to take some time away. It is my understanding that this semester you were to dissect frogs. However, frogs are insufficient to understanding the deeper meanings of life. We will move to a more complex organism. Instead, we will be dissecting cats. There was a collective gasp from the students. Tracy Hodge raised her hand. Schrödinger squinted his eyes at her. After a long moment of silence between them, she took this to mean she could speak. That's college-level work. Isn't that a bit advanced for us? Schrödinger took a deep breath and let it out in a long sigh. Yes, it is. But the challenge is what teaches us. Now, enough of this. I have taken the liberty of procuring our specimens. He pointed to a refrigeration unit at the back of the room. It was half again as big as a normal fridge, but had a glass door. Inside, wrapped in plastic, were the bodies of 6 cats. The students turned in their seats and looked at them. Someone said, "Oh, man." Schrödinger walked down the aisle between the 6 workstations, opened the fridge, and took out the cats. He dropped one on each workstation as he made his way back to the front of the room. "Today there will be no actual dissection," he said. "We will simply examine the specimens, learn correct biological terms, and understand our goals. Now, unwrap your cats." The class was an hour long, but seemed to last days. Dr. Schrödinger was dry in his presentation, and everyone struggled with the idea of slicing into and peeling apart the cats. Finally, 5 minutes before the bell, Schrödinger told them to wrap the cats up and put them in the fridge. When the bell rang, the students shot up out of their seats and ran for the door. For Calvin, Sophia, Katana, and Evan, Their next class was Study Hall with Coach McCready. Everyone loved that class because Coach didn't require that they actually study. In fact, he didn't care what they did or even if they came to class, so most students chose not to. As usual, the room was empty. Even Coach McCready chose not to show up today. Calvin pushed two tables together and they all took a seat. "What the hell did we just do?" Evan asked. He looked down at his hands. "I scrubbed them, but they still feel gross." "It feels so wrong to be handling those poor dead animals," Sophia said. "I wonder how many of them were pets, or if they were strays."
"And I wonder where he got them," Katana asked.
Calvin was the only one who didn't seem to be put out by it all. This is something that's done in a college environment, and at the end of the day, what's the difference if it's frogs or cats? Evan looked at Calvin as if he were speaking an alien language. "Dude, they're cats. I don't care if it's advanced college level stuff or not. I can't do this. I won't do it." Sophia had a determined look on her face. "I agree. It's too much, too gross, too disturbing, and I want to do something about it." Katana winced. Evan and Calvin groaned. "Please, don't let this turn into another one of your causes," Calvin said. Sophia narrowed her eyes at Calvin. "With my causes, I'm trying to stand up for injustice. I'd think you'd be a bit more on board with some of my causes."
"Why is that?" Calvin asked. "You think because I'm black, I'm a victim?"
"Cut it out," Katana said. "We're all friends here." Calvin and Sophia often discussed injustices in America, both real and perceived. Though they disagreed on many points, they still loved each other like family.
"Not to throw gasoline on the fire," Evan said, "but I agree with Sophia about the cats."
Sophia gave Evan an approving nod. "So, what do we do about it?"
Evan shrugged. "I don't know. Maybe we come back tonight and get rid of them. Let's be like Public Enemy and fight the power."
Sophia's eyes shot wide. "Yes, that's a great idea. We'll take the cats and give them a proper burial. Maybe we can even get the name of the company that supplied them, and I can start a social media campaign against them."
"Wait a minute," Calvin said. "What you're suggesting is breaking and entering."
Evan's eyes brightened at the thought of outright rebellion.
"It's not like we're breaking into someone's home and stealing from them."
"What if we get caught?" Calvin said. Sophia smirked. "My mom's a lawyer, remember?" Katana rolled her eyes at Evan and Sophia's anti-establishment ideology. But she did like the idea of adventure.
"I'm in," she said. "Besides, we're juveniles, and what we'd be doing is relatively harmless."
Calvin shook his head, resigning himself to the inevitability of this plan.
"Okay, I'm in, but this better be worth it."
"You're an aspiring writer," Katana said. "This will give you a great story to tell." They agreed to meet up at Misfits Coffee on Main Street at 9 p.m. and head to the school. By that time, all the sports teams would have finished practice and Melvin Buck, the school's only janitor, would be gone and school would be empty. After jazzing themselves up on strong coffee, they walked over to the school, which was located a mile south of Main Street. They each had backpacks, which they would use to stuff the cats in. They made their way to the back of the school to the small loading bay where cafeteria supplies were delivered. Calvin had heard that the lock on the door was busted and no one had ever gotten around to fixing it. He grabbed the handle and pulled. Sure enough, it was open. They stepped inside a small receiving room at the back of the cafeteria.
The school was dark, lit only by the occasional emergency light, which was perfect for stealthy maneuvering. They crept from the cafeteria and quickly made their way to the science hall. "Hang on," Katana whispered. "Look." The biology lab's door was the original from when the school was built in 1960. It was wooden with a large square of glass. Weak light spilled through, and they could see shadows moving about, indicating that someone was inside. "Crap," Calvin said. "We're going to get caught." "No, we won't," Sophia said. "We can wait it out. Whoever it is will eventually leave." "I'm not waiting," Calvin said. "We don't know who it is or how long they will be here. I say we come back tomorrow night." Sophia sighed. "Okay, but promise me we'll come back tomorrow." Before any of them could respond, a scream came from the lab. Someone cursed and said, "Hold still, damn it." Then, another long, angry scream. "That sounded like a cat," Sophia said. Evan crept toward the lab. The others were hesitant, but after a heartbeat, they followed. If they were careful, they would be able to peek through the window and not get seen. Evan put his back against the wall and peeked inside. His mouth fell open and his eyes shot wide. "What in the world?" "Let me see," Calvin said. He peeked over Evan's shoulder. "What's happening?" Katana whispered. Calvin scrunched up his face in confusion. "I'm not sure." Katana and Sophia dropped to the floor and crawled to the other side of the door. They stood and carefully peered inside. "What's he doing?" Inside, the lab was dimly lit, causing black shadows to pool in the corners of the room. Dr. Schrodinger and Melvin Buck, the school janitor, stood at one of the lab stations. Melvin was a bear of a man, short and thick, with broad shoulders and strong arms. He was wearing his usual gray zip-up coveralls. Sitting in front of them was a metal box, roughly 2 feet square. It had a hinged lid that was pushed open. Schrodinger held a cat by the nape of its neck, trying to keep from getting clawed as it writhed and fought to break free from his grip. The cat was mostly black, but the left half of its face was white. The cat twisted and sunk its claws into his wrist. "Damn it!" Schrodinger hissed. He shoved the cat into the box and Melvin slammed the lid. They could hear the cat's muffled wailing and scratching to be set free. Schrodinger pushed his round-framed glasses onto his nose and walked over to the sink. He washed the blood away from the claw marks while swearing under his breath in German. "Why did he put the cat in that box?" Sophia whispered. Calvin said, "His grandfather's experiment." Katana's eyes shot wide. "What? This can't really be happening." Schrodinger snatched a small vial from the table. "I bet that's the poison," Calvin said. Schrodinger grabbed his phone and pulled up his video recording app and began narrating. "This is my 7th attempt at my grandfather's experiment," he said. "In my past 6 attempts, after administering the poison, I tried using my will to bring the cat back to life. However, upon opening the box, they were all dead." The cat had stopped its frantic attempt to escape and had quietened down. Schrodinger handed his phone to Melvin, who continued to record. He then used a dropper and squirted a small amount of poison through a small round hole that was in the top of the box. It is my goal with these experiments to prove that our minds have great power over our reality, even bringing the dead back to life. We only have to learn how to focus our willpower to achieve the results we want. However, after these 6 failed attempts, I realized that something is needed to amplify my willpower. "What's he talking about?" Evan said. Calvin put a finger to his lips. "Shh." Schrodinger stepped over to his desk and retrieved a laptop and what appeared to be a headband, about 3 inches wide and made of silicone. Affixed to the band were 3 small electronic devices that resembled computer chips. He slid the band onto his head, ensuring one of the devices sat over each temple and the front of his forehead. He opened up the computer. "Willpower is simply a focusing of brainwaves. So, I have written a software program that, when paired with this device, will amplify my brainwaves." He looked over to ensure that Melvin was still recording. "At this moment, I believe that the cat inside this box is currently in 2 simultaneous states, which is to say that I believe the cat is both alive and dead at the same time. If this device works, I should be able to focus all my willpower more narrowly onto the cat, and this time be successful in proving that I have power over death." "He's insane," Katana said. Schrodinger fired up the program, causing small LED lights on the devices at his temples and forehead to glow green. He leaned toward the box, eyes squinted, focusing all his thoughts onto the cat inside. After about a minute, he said, "I believe that the cat is now dead." Melvin stepped closer and pointed the phone so that he could get a clear shot inside the box. Schrodinger stopped the program. The lights on the headband flickered off. He then lifted the lid and peered inside. "We will now remove the cat and examine it to be sure." He reached inside and took out the cat. It hung limply in his hands. He laid it on the table and began his examination. "The cat is not breathing. It has no heartbeat. Its eyes are lifeless and beginning to cloud over. There's foam around its mouth, which I believe to be from the effects of the poison. I have attached an EEG to the cat's head to check for brain activity, and it shows that there is none. This cat is dead. I will now return it to the box and perform the second part of the experiment, where I will attempt to bring the cat back to life using my free will." He placed the dead cat back in the box and shut the lid. Melvin attached the phone onto a small tripod sitting on the adjacent table and ensured that it was a proper angle to record what happened next. He took control of the laptop and tapped on the keyboard. The tiny devices on the headband lit up green. He nodded at Schrodinger. Schrodinger squinted at the box. "I'm using my free will to believe that the cat is now alive." After a minute, he nodded at Melvin, who opened the box. They peered inside. Schrodinger frowned. "It appears the cat is still dead. However, I was using the lowest setting on my invention. I will increase it by 25%. Melvin shut the lid, then tapped at the keyboard. The devices on the headband glowed a brighter green. Schrodinger focused hard, nibbling his lip as he did so. After a moment, he lifted the lid, and his face contorted into frustration. "Still dead," he said. "We will increase the power another 25%. Melvin tapped at the keyboard and the devices turned an ominous orange. "We're in the danger zone," he said. "We're good," Schrodinger shot back. "But you said if we weren't careful, we could fry your synapses." Schrodinger glared at him. "I know what I said. But I am the scientist. You are not. You are being well compensated to assist me, so do what I say." Melvin seethed and clenched his fists for the briefest of moments. He raised the power level another 25%. Schrodinger put his hands on the table, hovering over the box. "I believe the cat is now alive." He opened the lid, looked inside, then slammed it shut. "Damn it! Another 25%. Melvin glared, but complied. The LEDs on the headband now spiked an angry red. Schrodinger began to bat his eyes, clearly in pain. He let go of the table and grabbed his temples. Melvin reached out to lower the power level. "No," Schrodinger said. 10% more. Melvin no longer looked angry. He was full on worried. "You don't look so good." "Do it," Schrodinger hissed. Melvin pushed the power. The LEDs were now pulsing red. Schrodinger staggered back, steadied himself, then grabbed onto the table and intently focused on the box. His eyes were bloodshot and tears welled up in them. A thick rope of drool slithered from the corner of his mouth. "I believe the cat to be alive," he moaned. "Alive? It is alive." He reached a shaky hand out and peeked inside. He dropped the lid and moaned in anger and agony. "More. More power." Melvin hesitated, then pushed the power 10% more. The red LEDs flashed faster. A bloody tear rolled down Schrodinger's left cheek. His knees buckled. Melvin reached out and grabbed him by the arm, steadied him. Schrodinger screamed, "It is alive!" The already dim lights in the room flickered, causing the shadows in the corners to writhe as if in eager expectation. The computer screen flared bright, then exploded. Chunks of plastic and hardware flew out in all directions. Schrodinger fell to the floor in a heap. The lights in the room went out, flashed, then slowly came back on. Melvin scrambled over and lifted Schrodinger and leaned him against the table. "Are you okay?" Schrodinger used an unsteady hand and ripped the headband away and tossed it onto the floor. His hair was wild and there were angry red burn marks on his temples and forehead. "Yes, I think. Give me a moment."
"I got you," Melvin grunted.
Schrodinger took a couple steadying breaths.
"Okay, look inside the box."
Melvin reached out toward the box. Just as his fingers touched the lid, it rattled. Melvin snatched back his hand, his eyes wide. "What the hell?" The box rattled again, this time more aggressively. He flashed a worried look at Schrodinger. The box rattled again, this time so hard that it bounced and scooted a few inches back on the table. From inside, they heard an angry growl. Schrodinger wiped away the bloody tears that had oozed down his cheeks. He looked simultaneously elated and terrified. "Open it," he said. Melvin was probably the toughest man any of the students had ever met.
There was a rumor floating around school that he had once been a boxer and had killed a man in the ring. But now, as he looked at the rattling box, he hesitated, looking at Schrodinger as if he had lost his mind. "Do it!" Schrodinger snapped. "Now!" Melvin squinted one eye and thought, then gave a what-the-hell shrug and threw open the lid. As he did so, the commotion with the box stopped. For 5 long seconds, nothing happened. Then, there was another long, ominous growl. "Did he just bring that cat back to life?" Sophia whispered. "I think we should go," Evan said. They all felt the same, but were captivated by their macabre need to see the cat. Another growl came from inside the box, but this time, it seemed as if there were 2 cats instead of 1. Melvin planted his feet wide, held his hands out, ready to grapple the cat. Schrodinger took a weak-kneed step back and nearly fell. A black paw, claws out, reached up from the box and slowly grasped the edge. Melvin looked scared. Schrodinger had an unhinged grin and fevered eyes. Another paw rose out of the box and grasped the edge. Then the cat slowly lifted itself into view. A maniacal laugh escaped Schrodinger. The kids gasped at what they saw. Melvin jumped back in horror and snatched a glass beaker from the table behind him and held it out as a weapon. The cat had 2 heads. One was normal, with eyes bright with life, and it was completely covered in white fur. The other head was black and hung askew, almost limply at the neck. Its eyes were milky with death. The normal head meowed. At the same time, the other gave a deranged cry that seemed to come from a mangled throat. Sophia nearly fainted, falling to her knees in the dark hallway. Katana stepped back from the window in disgust. Evan tried to say something, but nothing came out. Calvin was the only one who kept his wits about him. He leaned closer to the window, straining to see every detail. "It worked," Calvin said, "but not in the way he wanted it to. Fascinating." The cat hopped out of the box and onto the table. It flicked its tail, the normal head looking at Melvin, the black head looking at Schrodinger. Both sets of eyes were squinted in rage, and it growled. "Kill it," Schrodinger said, his voice hoarse with fear. "Kill it. Kill it now. Hurry." Melvin raised the glass beaker and took a cautious step toward the cat. It pounced from the table onto Melvin's chest. It raked its claws down his face, leaving deep gashes that poured blood. The normal head screamed in rage. The other sunk its teeth deep into Melvin's cheek. Melvin cried out and dropped the beaker. It shattered on the ground. He grabbed the cat with both hands. He tried to pry it from his face, but its claws were sunk deep. Schrodinger regained enough composure to look around for a weapon. He saw a tray of scalpels sitting beside the specimen cooler. He stumbled over and snatched one. He turned back to help Melvin and shook his head in disbelief. What have I done? Melvin pulled the abomination free. Blood slithered down his face. He flung the cat to the ground and ran toward the door. The kids jumped back in surprise. But just as he was about to grab the handle, The cat jumped onto his back, and both heads sunk their teeth into his neck, severing both his carotid arteries. He fell to his knees, bleeding out. Evan croaked, "We have to do something."
"I'm not going in there," Sophia said.
Calvin turned and ran down the hall. "I have an idea," he said. "Katana, help me." Katana shot off after him. They ran halfway down the hall to where a fire extinguisher and an axe were hanging on the wall. Calvin snatched the extinguisher and Katana the axe. They ran back up to the door. Evan pushed the door open and followed Calvin and Katana inside. Sophia followed, but hesitantly. Once inside, Evan grabbed the box from the table. His plan was to use it to trap the cat. Melvin was on the floor, lying in a large pool of blood. Schrodinger was standing in a gloomy corner, holding the scalpel toward the cat. The black, undead head lolled around as if it were rabid. Its milky eyes seethed hatred. Foam dripped from its mouth. The white head looked back at the kids. Its eyes darted from the fire extinguisher, then to the axe. It gave a warning hiss. "Get away!" Calvin yelled. He pulled the trigger on the extinguisher, blowing a cloud of white powder at the cat, temporarily stunning it. Evan stepped in and slammed the box down, but he was too slow. The cat shot out from the powdery cloud and straight at Katana. She jumped back and swung the axe. She missed. The axe thudded into the floor, and the cat shot out of the lab and into the hallway. The kids ran through the door, ready to give chase, but it was too dark, and the cat too fast. It was gone. They stepped back into the lab. Evan stood guard at the door, watching to see if the little beast came back. Schrodinger still held the scalpel. It shook in his hand. He raked his other hand through his nest of hair. "What have I done? It's two heads. How did that happen?" The kids shot each other, "What the heck do we do now?" glances. Katana motioned to Calvin, urging him to say something. Calvin still held the extinguisher, ready to use it as a weapon against Schrodinger. "Sir, are you going to be okay?" Schrodinger had his eyes locked on Melvin's body, mumbling incoherently. Calvin took a cautious step toward him. "Dr. Schrodinger, look at me." Schrodinger looked up. "Where did I go wrong?" "Please put the scalpel down," Katana said. She stood her ground, the axe held at the ready. Schrodinger made a disgusted face and tossed the scalpel aside. He closed his eyes and drew a deep breath. When he opened them, they were clearer and focused. He was calm. He looked from Melvin to the kids. "You need to leave," he said. Calvin shook his head. "We can't leave. We need to call the police." "And tell them what?" Schrodinger asked. "That I killed a cat, then brought it back from the dead, and that it killed Melvin. Do you know how ludicrous that sounds? They'll never believe it." Calvin couldn't seem to counter his logic. "But we have to do something." "He's right," Sophia said. "How are we going to explain any of this? Nobody will believe us. They will think we killed Melvin. I can't be part of this. I'm leaving." "You can't leave," Evan said. "We have to make this right." Sophia pushed past Evan. "No, we don't have to make anything right. This is all his fault." With that, she used the light on her phone and left, casting fearful glances, looking for the cat, should it attack. Evan turned to the others in disbelief. "She really left us." "She's right," Schrodinger said. "This is my fault. I can fix it." He reached into a pocket of his lab coat and pulled out his phone. Go. I'll give you 15 minutes and I'll call the sheriff. I'll tell them it was an accident. I'll make up something that I hope they will believe.
Like what? Calvin asked.
I don't know, Schrodinger said. But if you kids are here when they arrive, it will complicate the story and cause a lot of problems for you. Calvin looked at Katana, then to Evan. After a moment, he realized that there really wasn't anything they could do.
Okay.
The kids stepped into the hallway and turned back toward Schrodinger. He had stepped closer to Melvin's body. He had a grim look on his face. He looked up.
Go. I'll handle this.
Calvin and Katana replaced the axe and the extinguisher. They then made their way back out of the school. They walked in silence to Misfit's coffee, thinking through the horror they had witnessed. They sat at a table with titles of punk songs carved into its top. Posters and black and white photos of punk bands were hung on the walls. A waiter named Cringe, wearing a leather jacket and a pink mohawk, strode over. His arms were covered in tattoos and he had a safety pin through his septum. They ordered strong coffee and spoke in hushed whispers, going over the details of what they had witnessed and wondered how Schrodinger would handle it. After a while, they all decided to stay the night at Calvin's, which they would often do on the weekends, for all-night marathons of horror movies and pizza. However, this time, there were no horror movies. Nothing Hollywood could conjure would be as terrifying as what they had just experienced. Neither of them slept well, and the next morning they decided to walk to school, considering it was bright with morning sun. They bumped and elbowed the mass of students as they navigated their way to their first class, which happened to be biology lab. They were quiet, wondering why they had not heard any gossip amongst the students about what had occurred the night before. There was a handwritten sign taped to the door that stated class was canceled for the day. Their hearts lifted a bit at not having to interact with Schrodinger. Usually, when a class was canceled, they spent the time in the library or outside at one of the picnic tables placed around campus. However, when they peeked inside the room, they saw Sophia sitting at one of the stations. She was fidgety, looking down at her hands. She looked up and motioned for them to come inside.
Do we?
Evan asked.
Of course, Katana said.
They stepped inside and closed the door behind them. They walked over to Sophia. Katana and Calvin stood while Evan sat beside her. She took a moment to compose herself.
Guys, I'm sorry about leaving you last night. It was just too much. I can't process it. I mean, what the hell did we witness?
Katana shrugged.
We spent a lot of time talking about that last night, trying to make sense of it all.
The experiment clearly worked, but not as Schrodinger expected. And what we witnessed is going to take a long time to process. They glanced around the lab. There was no blood on the floor. It had been scrubbed away. The lab was in perfect order. The bell rang.
I checked the news this morning, Sophia said. There's nothing about Melvin's death.
Yeah, Evan said.
I checked the sheriff's department's site. They have a crime blotter page where they publish local crime. Nothing. It's like none of this happened.
The cat, Calvin said. It's out there, somewhere, running free. Eventually someone's going to see it, or worse, it will attack someone.
Sophia shuddered. I want to feel sorry for the poor thing. But that second head,
It was so freaking disturbing. That's the image that won't go away. The drool, the teeth, those milky dead eyes. Evan shook his head at the thought. It was almost as if the dead part of the cat was demented and insane and evil. Suddenly, the classroom door opened. They looked up to see Schrodinger walk into the class. "Dr. Schrodinger," Katana said, "what happened last night?" Schrodinger seemed surprised to see them. Then he lifted his chin and struck an arrogant pose. "Last night, I created life from death simply by the power of my will." "But you created a monster," Calvin said, "and now it's running loose. It's dangerous and could kill again." "And what about Melvin? What did the sheriff say?" Something wasn't right about this situation. Schrodinger was not the broken man they had seen last night. He was now more arrogant than ever. "There's nothing we can do about the cat at the moment. And I didn't call the sheriff." The door opened, and Melvin stepped into the room. He had angry red gashes on his face and neck that were raw but clearly healing. They looked like they would likely leave nasty scars. His right eye was normal. His left eye was cloudy with the cataract of death. When Melvin saw the kids, he growled and took an ominous step toward them, his left hand reaching out toward them like a claw. He seemed to struggle to control his new dark urges, and Schrodinger stopped him by grabbing his arm. Sophia wrapped her arms around herself and shook her head. "No, no, I can't believe this." Evan shot up from his chair, a confused look on his face. Katana instinctively stepped back and glanced around the room for another way out, though there was not one. Calvin was clearly as disturbed as his friends. However, his curiosity beat back his fear. He looked at Melvin, then back to Schrodinger. "I don't understand. We watched him die." A wide, mad smile spread across Schrodinger's face. "Yes, we did, didn't we? But I brought him back." "You used your invention on him?" Calvin said. "You're insane." Schrodinger's smile faltered. A mask of hate contorted his face. "Geniuses are often called insane by simpletons. Melvin is not like the damned cat. He is self-aware, and he and I can control his new urges. Now, I suggest you keep all this to yourselves, not that anyone would ever believe you anyway. If you leave me be and follow the rules, all will be well. Otherwise..." He trailed off, looking at Melvin, then back to them, letting the unspoken threat hang in the air. "Now, get out of my classroom." The kids snatched up their backpacks and scrambled out the door and into the hallway. Without a word, they left the campus and took their time walking back to Misfit's Coffee, letting the morning sun burn away the darkness that threatened to overtake them. After a while, Katana asked, "What are we going to do about this? Schrodinger? The cat? Melvin?" Evan said, "We're going to have to fight, aren't we?" They had just turned onto Main Street. They stopped in front of Romero's Comics and Games to consider Evan's question. "Yes," Calvin said, "we are. We're in a lot of danger. But If we stick together, maybe we can survive. They stepped across the street and into Misfits Coffee, where they chose to push the darkness aside, at least for the moment, and trust that the bonds of friendship would help them overcome the darkness to come.